It's basketball season and we've got you covered. The Ringer NBA show breaks down the latest and greatest around the league 5 days a week. Check out the Ringer NBA show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am knackered, Musa. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah.
You're fine. Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Just a little bit of a spoiler. We're doing a rare thing that we don't really ever do on Stadio. We're recording our intro at the end of the podcast because so much happened during the recording of the podcast that we felt like we had to summarize it again. Yeah. So obviously the European Super League was announced.
Yeah.
Or the intentions of the European Super League was announced. So we'll be getting into that during the recording, and you'll hear it when it happens. The news that Jose Mourinho has been sacked as Spurs manager broke. And yeah, basically we wanted to also start the podcast with a little bit of actual football talk, because there was some really good football that happened this weekend.
There was.
So it's a very, very chaotic episode. We apologize if it seems all over the place.
But frankly, so is football.
But actually, to be honest, you try doing a better job. All of you lot. You don't know what I've been through.
Gods, take him away. Gods,
you don't know what I've been through. Let's do some admin.
Yep.
I had a piece go up on The Ringer on Friday about the four Clasicos.
Excellent.
It was 10 years ago. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Great piece of writing.
You've got a piece going up this week. I've got a piece going up this week as well, which has nothing to do. So I've got a piece going up around all of this Super League stuff. It's been in the pipe for a while. I was actually writing a piece on the UEFA reforms. I think there's another couple of pieces go up on The Ringer this week about...
I've got one coming up. It's unrelated to this.
Ooh.
So my piece coming up has been approved already. I got the sign off by the great editor, Conan Evans, last night.
That's
so
Connor.
That's going up. Great piece of editing. So that's going up. And then I've got another piece coming later this week, which is unrelated to the current context, which I'm looking forward to.
Ooh.
Which I need. Yeah. It's going to be fun.
I don't even know about that. What is it?
Doesn't matter. It's all right.
Yeah. Fine. Is it about when you were in Brazil?
Ryan, in a relationship, everyone's got their secrets.
Oh, this isn't a relationship. Strictly in an arrangement. I'm going to announce my own Super League.
Breaking away.
Yeah, I'm breaking away. It's going to be a league of one. No promotion or relegation.
The European Hunt Champions League.
I win
league.
It every year.
Super League.
So today we were going to talk about the four Clasicos. We were going to do an episode on that. We're going to save it till later in the week.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about football originally because there was so much stuff that happened this weekend that we thought, oh man, we should talk about the football because there was some amazing stuff that happened.
Momentous stuff.
We're going to do the Four Clásicos episode on Thursday, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, before we get into the news that broke on Sunday about the European Super League, we're actually going to talk about football because, as you rightly said to me earlier before we started recording, we should talk about the good things that happened this weekend because there were some good things that happened this weekend. There were some great things that happened this weekend. And yes, the announcement of the European Super League is going to massively overshadow all of that and dominate the news cycle.
Yeah.
And understandably so. And we're not immune to that. We're going to have to cover it. And we obviously have thoughts. But there was some amazing football this weekend and there were some amazing results this weekend. So we thought before we get onto the serious stuff, we would shout out some of our favorite football bits from the weekend. Yeah. So I think the first one that we unanimously agreed on.
Yeah.
Leicester City making it to an FA Cup final where they were facing Chelsea. And I'm really pleased for Brendan Rodgers. I'm really pleased for Leicester City. I feel a bit sorry for Southampton because obviously I have a little bit of a soft spot for Southampton. I would have loved to have seen them go to an FA Cup final again. But I think for Leicester, like this final isn't cut and dried.
Not at all. Not at all.
And we on a weekend that was kind of obviously ended up pretty grim, I think this was a real, you know, seeing Leicester and Chelsea in the cup final, I think that's a really tasty cup final.
It's a great final and styles that I think mesh quite well.
Mm.
I think, yeah. I think that makes for a very interesting game of football, maybe a good game of football, actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, Chelsea obviously have gone to the final as well, and there's that back-to-back finals for Chelsea. Arsenal beat them last season.
Yeah, 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 back-to-back.
Yeah, it was City-Watford the year before.
Yeah, the 6-0.
Chelsea-United the year before that, and then Arsenal-Chelsea again the year before that. So Chelsea have had 5 of the last 6 finals they've been to.
They're really good in the FA Cup.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Remember how Ashley Cole would just rack up FA Cups with with them, yeah.
Chelsea have got a massively great record. They're the third most successful side in the competition.
This is a big win for them as well over City.
Huge.
City threw everything at them.
Yeah, and Pep's quadruple is no more.
And this was an important trophy for Manchester City, make no mistake. They really went for this.
A big kind of, I'm going to say it, it was a statement victory.
It was, and it was a marker for sure.
Yeah, and I think that I think it was Kevin Hatchard wrote on Twitter. Shouts to Kevin Hatchard, great Bundesliga commentator. He was saying Chelsea are already positioning themselves for a major title challenge next season in the Premier League.
Absolutely, absolutely.
If they're still in there, they're still allowed in the Premier League.
If there is a Premier League,
yeah. Again, the job that Tuchel is doing at Chelsea is superb. That West Brom game, the only blip. The other thing in England that I want to give props to in the men's game is Norwich. Norwich back in the Premier League next season.
Yeah.
I really like this trend of a few clubs sticking with their manager. You know, Farke was never really in danger of losing his job at Norwich. And I think they kind of accepted that they would probably go down when they were in the Premier League last season. And I'm really pleased for them to come back in the Premier League. I thought they played some pretty good stuff when they were in the Premier League. They obviously had that win over Man City at the beginning, early on in the season, which
encouraged everyone else to go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the Bielsa thing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So yeah, looking forward to seeing them back in the Premier League. Elsewhere in Europe,
I'd actually in Europe like to go straight to PSG beating Lyon in the Champions League. Yeah, only because this was such a funny tie. So PSG went through 3-2 on aggregate.
Postponed due to COVID, by the way.
Yeah, so it got rearranged the weekend. But you know what was really strange about this tie is that in both legs, I've never seen a side. There were like three opponents in this. There was PSG, there was Lyon, and then there was PSG themselves. And the kind of psychological barrier was it because PSG's approach play in both games was so, so good. And PSG's finishing was not so good. And you saw, I mean, it's very, I hesitate to talk about an opponent being intimidating, but some of the finishing over the couple of legs was like, it lacked the kind of assurance of the build up, and PSG overcame that mental hurdle because they created so well throughout these two ties. They were the better side in both games. And when Lyon took the early lead after about 3-4 minutes, you know, everyone was like, okay, this is just another Lyon doing it again. But PSG played so much football and they brought it back. They ended up converting the hardest of their chances about half an hour in, which is funny because they missed some like close-in ones, but then scored a beauty. Half an hour gone. Grace Guyoro got an absolute beauty after 25 minutes. Curving into the top corner from, frankly, an obscene angle. And then the heartbreaking thing was that Wendy Renard, who's been the star, she's been the star of these, of Lyon's run. They've won like five straight, I think, in the Champions League. And she scored the own goal at the near post. And weirdly, a lot of people were like, this is heartbreaking for her. But the funny thing about it was, sounds weird to say this, it was weirdly, the tragedy was weirdly fitting because she gave absolutely everything. If you see like the way she's stretching for that, she got to the ball ahead of like the other attacker. If you're going to go out, you're going to go out like that. It reminded me of Roy Keane's own goal in the semi-final against Real Madrid, where the best player on the pitch is the one that ends up sealing the defeat. And you see her like, even in the last minute, like she gets like an effort headed off the line, like towards the end. And it's just like, Wendy Renard was everywhere in this tie. And the thing about this last four is, those are the best four teams. You know, those are the best four teams, I think, remaining. And I can, you know, I have no idea who's going to win out of those lot, because I'm sad for Lyon, obviously, because, you know, the champions have gone out and they've done a great, they've been on an amazing run. I'm also excited to see a new winner. That makes sense.
Pretty good weekend, I think, for Wolfsburg as well, I think, because they won in the league against Bayer Leverkusen, and Bayern lost their first game of the season in the Frauen Bundesliga, losing 3-2 to Hoffenheim on Saturday. So the gap at the top of the Frauen Bundesliga now is only 2 points. Bayern go to Wolfsburg on the 9th of May. The title is essentially in both teams' hands.
We have league.
We do. Let's talk quickly about the Copa del Rey final.
Yeah.
Barca beating Athletic Club. There's an absolutely astounding Leo Messi goal in this game that everyone's probably seen by now. What is it with Athletic and Messi goals starting on the halfway line?
Do you know, it's like that scene in Lord of the Rings. Bring him down, Legolas, bring him down. You see the orc approaching from like 50 yards away and there's just nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about, I don't know, it's, you know, Messi and Athletic Club, and it was Neymar as well. There's some, I don't know what it is. Those two, because Neymar had that thing for Athletic as well. They would go at him and he loved it. And there's something
about... We mentioned it, wouldn't it? Like that rivalry is actually, this always had kind of flair players at Barca, going back to the Maradona, Goycochea days.
Yes.
You know, where an Athletic who were just like...
Do you know what it is? It's because elite players, elite dribblers are brave and they love contact or the threat of contact. Because that goal that Messi scores, so... Barcelona beat Athletic Club 4-0. And this is the headline of this is a really significant victory. I was tweeting, and I'm quite proud to say this, I was like, this is like such a vital victory because it bridges the gap between old era and new era. Then shout out Gerard Piqué comes out and tweets about the new era. And I was like, this was really important to them.
Yeah, massive.
They knew they needed a bridging victory. And you've got these young players who've won something now, and not only won something, but playing in that style. And then there was something so symbolic about the fact that so Barca win 4-0 and they dominate possession from early on. And they actually break through relatively late. I think they break through with 20 minutes to go. But once they score, it just, you know, it's a cascade of goals. But what was significant, I think, was that you had Frenkie de Jong balling out. It was outstanding. You had him combining really well with Messi, almost like a handing over the torch, a passing of the torch. And the fact that Barcelona played their football the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
They played how they wanted to on the front foot for the last two goals. I mean, so the final goal basically kept possession for 2.5 minutes, 60 passes.
The Messi side foot.
Yeah, but the third goal, very quickly, just to be specific about that, the Messi goal, for the three people in the universe that still haven't seen it, for the three organisms in the known universe who haven't seen it, it's astonishing.
I reckon that, you know, those like those fish that are like transparent or translucent that live on the ocean floor.
Yeah.
I think they've seen it as well. Someone's passed them the highlights. They've probably, whatever the equivalent is of the deepest sea WhatsApp group, they've seen it.
They've seen it. But then again, think of their TV screen is basically like, it's the width of the ocean, basically. I mean, they're streaming it from literally like up there, so they've seen all of it. But what I would say about the Messi goal is the way he constructs it, it's mind-blowing. It's almost like, you know what, if you basically put together Leo Messi's, if you basically like show that goal and say, this is Leo Messi. That's his entire career is in that goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dribbling, the acceleration, the combination, the calmness. To be honest, it's one of the most Cruyff goals he's ever scored.
This reminds me actually of a goal I mentioned in my piece about the Clásicos, which was his second goal in the Champions League first leg against Real Madrid. because he plays a lazy 1-2 with Busquets in that game.
Yeah.
And here, compared to the famous, or the couple of really famous goals against Athletic, where he's had to do it all himself, he basically plays a double 1-2 with Frenkie de Jong.
Unreal. Unreal.
De Jong assisted for, whose goal was it? Griezmann's as well.
Yeah.
And Griezmann. just looked really, really happy to be there. As did everyone after the game when they were all getting their pictures taken with Leo.
Can I mention it quickly? No, first of all, we'll get to the pitch in a second, but what I love about the De Jong thing, you know, the Barca talk about the pausa, the hesitation pass, right? That was pure pausa, hesitation pass, holding it. It was like Xavi holding it for Jordi Alba in the final of the Euro 2012, when Jordi Alba just rips past from the outside and Xavi just holds and rolls into his path. And the funny thing, actually, we're going to talk about this in the Four Clásicos episode. I'm kind of like getting ahead of myself, but yeah, the funny thing about that Messi goal, Ryan, in the semi-final is that like Messi gives you trailers of it. In each of the games before, Messi occupies space in the inside left position and he's like, he's looking up and it's like, he does a little run, but doesn't go all the way. And it's almost like it was funny because I was watching the games again, like in order, and I was like, oh my gosh, Messi has been looking for that gap for like three matches. It's like a raccoon coming around the back door to see if the back door is open. And then one day, 57 consecutive days of watching the back door, there's a crack open and Messi's like, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. And he's sitting. It's just so funny watching that little space. There's a little space by Sergio Ramos's left ankle in the inside left position. And Messi's just watching it, but never like attacks it. And then eventually he's like, yeah. Like a naughty child.
Never underestimate the power of the copper, man.
Yes.
It's very, very important for the cycle of a team, you know? And the only thing that I feel really sorry for Marcelino. It's a real shame for them that they didn't get one of them, but he's still done an incredible job since he's been there.
I'm not part of the Athletic Club fan base, so maybe presumptuous here, but that man will have brought a lot of joy to a lot of people in a very difficult time for a lot of people at home. Like that he would have, and it's one of those things, isn't it? Football's a funny one, isn't it? Like, look at Sir Bobby Robson. Mm-hmm. Didn't win a World Cup, but is beloved because people remember moments. People remember goals and that cup run. They'll remember specific moments. It's heartbreaking to have lost, but the trophy cabinet isn't barren. You know, there is a Supercopa. And in the fullness of time, this will go down as a special team, a team that did special things at a time when the region needed it. And they really, I mean, there's a really sad picture of Iñaki Williams in the stands and he's obviously devastated, but you're only that devastated when you've given everything and when it means everything. And I think that's what they take from it. You gave everything to that Athletic Club. Like there's nothing else that you can, there's no recriminations there.
Yeah, I agree.
That's how I see it. Anyway.
Quickly before we wrap up this bit, Hansi Flick announced his desire to leave Bayern Munich at the end of the season, which is big. I think it caught Bayern on the hop. It looks like the DFB will be next for him, the national job. Just quickly, in a normal week, we would have gone into this quite a lot, but Friedhelm Funkel, the gentleman hired by Cologne a week ago, came out with some very ropey remarks on the weekend about...
Very.
I mean, I'd just say go and Google them.
Yeah. What I will say on a positive note is shout out to the Cologne supporters associations who came out very quickly with statements.
They're very good on stuff like that.
Yeah, they're really good. I just want to like shout that out because, you know, we hear about a lot of bad things going on in football, but what is really impressive a lot of the time is the resistance to these things and the supporters that get things done. A theme to which we will have to return shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
All right, man. So let's talk about what we're all here to hear.
Yes, okay. So we'll start this segment with a quoting a tweet by Susie Dent from Twitter. Her bio is that woman in Dictionary Corner, so she often tweets definitions of words and
on Countdown, by the way, the UK program.
Yeah. So she tweeted, word of the day is ingorgeousness, extreme greed, and insatiable desire for wealth at any cost. This is absolutely shocking. So the announcement was made under the cover of night, the announcement of proposals for a European Super League. Well, not proposals for, really, just the announcement of it.
They're doing it, yeah.
They're doing it, yeah.
That was it was big, like, we're doing this and no one can stop us energy.
Absolutely, yeah. So the idea is 12 founding clubs who will add a further three. They're going to add a further three. So there'll be, I think, in total 15 founding clubs. And between them, they're going to split $3.5 billion. So that means that each club is going to receive four times as much money as a club gets for winning the Champions League. It's a huge amount of money. There's a great piece of coverage by Tariq Panja, the New York Times. Tariq is an amazing follower, by the way.
Yeah, his piece was great.
He's been a great follower on Twitter for years. So at Tariq Panja. And the idea is they're going to be starting this league. They're going to play each other the midweek. And where do we even... I'm still forming thoughts on this. So please jump in. I'm still processing it. As I started this segment and I was going to go on a particular line, but I find now that words fail me, Ryan.
I think the problem is that we're recording this at around 10-ish, 10:30 Berlin time on Monday. Yeah. And there are announcements literally coming out every few minutes.
Yes.
This feels like watching a coup, like an actual coup. Like the live updates, the initial kind of announcement. For example, all of the 12 clubs who have announced there that they are founding clubs have quit any committee positions at UEFA and the European Club Association. If I'm being honest, I don't even really know where to begin. I mean, I'm going to read a little.
I'm the same. I'm struggling. Sorry, carry on.
So the latest update is, for example, and I've just fired up the Athletic breaking news piece. All 12 European clubs quit UEFA and ECA roles. How the Super League will work is the clubs say that 15 founding members will be joined by five other teams who qualify each season. They say the games will be played midweek starting in August, with teams playing home and away fixtures in two groups of 10, with the top three in each group automatically qualifying for the quarterfinals. Teams finishing fourth and fifth will then compete in a two-legged playoff for the remaining quarterfinal positions, and then a two-leg knockout format will be used to reach the final in May, which will be staged at a single neutral venue. In a single fixture and neutral venue. They've also said that the same will happen for the women's game as soon as possible.
That's like an afterthought. Almost.
Yeah,
that, I know. That whole, I know. The way they just threw that in, oh yeah, and also we'll do something for, girl boss feminism, let's do it for the ladies. Like, what? Like, it's weird.
The thing that strikes me is the arrogance of the assuming everything will be fine. So for example, in the statement that the clubs released, it said preserving the traditional domestic match calendar, which remains at the heart of the club game. There is also some stuff about they want to benefit, it benefits wider football and all this kind of frank, this bullshit. The whole thing is grim for a start. And if I'm being honest, I think it's so overwhelmingly grim on so many levels that I'm struggling to formulate articulate thoughts about it.
Can I be honest? This is how it feels. It feels like, imagine a church where everyone in the church hates the congregation, where all the staff hate the congregation. It's like that. It's like football is a place people come for solace, right? And the people running that whole structure hate the people inside it. And I say specifically, I think the people that devised this Super League is contempt of a level that is so brazen, so naked. They have basically taken all the value and just creamed it off the top. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is no different. What's happening in football is, it's no different from what happened in 2008 when the banks got bailed out, where they gambled. The banks gambled and then everyone else paid their debts. Everyone else paid them off, basically. The taxpayer paid them off. Like, they had all the fun. So these clubs basically ran themselves irresponsibly to the point where they needed to jump in the arms of these banks who'd given them the cash to bail them out. The only people that could bail them out, their irresponsible financial behavior in many cases, were banks, and they leapt into their arms.
Speaking of banks, again, JP Morgan have confirmed that they'll be financing it.
So that's where we are. This, you know, it's the comparison is the same. It's like football's 2008 moment, like its financial crash moment.
I mean, in terms of
the contempt for the average person, is how it feels.
I think it's interesting in terms of the setup of the clubs who have come out and announced that they're going to be part of the founding
members.
So, for example, no German sides in there.
Yeah.
Hans-Joachim Watzke at Dortmund released a statement saying that that Dortmund are part of an ECA which rejects the idea of a Super League and basically says that their views are pretty much 100% identical to Bayern. As far as he knows, both clubs intend to stand by the agreed reforms to the Champions League. So that's going to be kind of interesting, I think, in terms of who signs up, who doesn't. I think the fact that 6 of the 12 clubs come from the Premier League, which is the richest European league anyway, I think speaks volumes.
It was no surprise as well, because the Premier League was the precursor for this. The Premier League actually, this is the thing, what has to be understood in the context of all of this is that, unfortunately, the Premier League and UEFA, if they have a moment of introspection this week, will say, actually, we created the territory for this to emerge.
Yeah. I think this is an interesting thing to, I think, highlight is that,
yes,
there are no good guys and bad guys here. There are a lot of different varying bad guys, I think. So, for example, I wrote a bit of a reactive thread to it yesterday on Sunday when the news broke. In that, I said that, you know, UEFA has fucked European competition to the point where this has become possible. It doesn't mean that that's the only cause for this. What happens with football, and we saw it with the Miet und Deckel law in Berlin last week, where basically it reversed a kind of rent cap law. It's very hard to undo gradual erosion of a system.
Yes.
And I think what football has achieved over the last 20 years or so, and by football in this context, what I mean is specifically European top-level club football.
Yes.
There has been a gradual erosion of...
Safeguards, protections,
yes. But also, I think, the actual formats which make the sport a sport.
Yeah.
So, for example, it's actually in the piece that I was going to write, but I think that, you know, UEFA, like, dicked around with the three European competitions, got rid of one of them, and now I've realised, I think the introduction of the Conference League, for example, I think is probably the first admission from UEFA that they actually got something wrong, because they took away a third competition thinking that they didn't need it, and now they've realised actually a third competition is quite a good idea.
Yes.
But instead of stripping back massively the two competitions that they've already had, they're adding another bloated competition to two already bloated competitions. So it's always more. And I think that psychologically, I'm going to go really romantic and misty-eyed for a little bit, so forgive me, but I think that this is, because football specifically, but sport in general, is a really, really strange thing in the modern era, in the sense that you have multi-billion dollar industries that don't deal in tangible physical products. You're essentially dealing with emotion. You're essentially trading on emotional attachment. Does that make sense?
It's like religion.
Yeah, it basically is. Like brand loyalty, for example. Like sport is arguably probably the most brand loyal, apart from religion. But like, let's say strictly business, like probably probably the biggest business, or like contains the highest brand loyalty in any business in the world, because it is extremely hard to give up your sporting loves. Top level football in Europe has abused that for years. It's abused that relationship with its fans for years and years and years. And that comes from the clubs, that comes from the organizations that govern. What this is, in my opinion, is just a yet another example of many, which probably now go into the hundreds and thousands, of the people who are in charge of the game actually don't give a fuck about the game itself. They don't care. They don't care one bit. They don't care, because what has happened, I think, in my opinion, and I know this is going to be massively long-winded and a little bit all over the place, so apologies
to
people.
Go for it.
But I think that what happens is, from a psychological point of view, when you reduce the exclusivity of something, for an organization that deals so heavily in economics, they completely ignore one of the most basic economics principles, which is supply and demand. What UEFA did, I think, was they created a system that didn't just reward success. It rewarded not failure, but not top level success. So you didn't have to win a competition in order to get the same seat at a table as a winner did. Taking Arsenal as a prime example of that, over two decades of consistent Champions League qualification, they only really came close to winning it once, maybe twice if you take in the Chelsea defeat with the Wayne Bridge goal. They were probably the best side in Europe that season. But the season they went to the final, they went to the one final in 20 odd years of consistent Champions League qualification. Now, I saw a lot of Arsenal fans, and this isn't a dig at Arsenal fans, this is just the situation that it created or the conditions that it created, getting a little bit bored of consistent Champions League qualification because it was just the same cycle. However, imagine if Arsenal only qualified for the Champions League for the three league titles that they won. You then create a system that is less entitled. And I think UEFA have created an environment that has allowed entitlement to breed
absolutely
on a mass scale,
on and off the field. Yep.
Now, that isn't the only reason that this has happened. It's coincided with a time where, I think James Montagu wrote a really good thread about this, where you've had an influx of ungovernable wealth and
finance.
Thank
you. 2004, fit and proper persons test introduced to assess the owners. And that right there, allowing Fax and Shinawatra to own Manchester City with all the things, with the ongoing criminal investigations, is a major milestone. Yep. So just to jump in.
So that's another thing that you've got in there. This isn't a binary thing here. It's a gradual
incremental
erosion. It's an incremental increase in terms of, or incremental shift in terms of what they see the sport is. When you expand the Champions League to include more clubs who aren't ever going to get close to winning it, for example, you basically create this system where, you know, you become a Champions League club. It just becomes a competition, but it doesn't become as a reward for anything else. If you think back, and I know this is a little bit misty-eyed, but European Cups, say, for example, if you talk to Villa fans or you talk to Nottingham Forest fans, the European Cup wins define an era because they were a peak of a cycle. You know, they won the league. Won back-to-back European Cups, or they would go to the final 2 years in a row, or they would be part of these incredible sides that live long in the memory. Or if one team won the league one season, you know, Leicester, prime example, they will remember going to the Champions League because they won the league the year before and it was like a new thing. I think that when you assume that you can have a seat at the very top table for not achieving the top achievement that year, it creates this really fucking weird psychological thing, which is essentially what the entitlement thing is.
They basically gentrified football. It's a permanent gentrification of football that was happening for a long time. But now what they've done is they've created a kind of gated community. And the problem for football right now is, it's that you can call it the parable of Canary Wharf, right? Canary Wharf, basically, they went into Canary Wharf and they threw up all these huge high-rise gleaming office blocks in the middle of like one of the most deprived areas in London, Tower Hamlets, right? What's happened now? The pandemic has hit and all of a sudden those buildings are standing empty and they're doing anything they can not to give that housing or that those buildings to like poor people as housing. And this is what could happen to the Super League if they're not careful. Mm-hmm. They have gambled so much on the income, the loyalty of this nebulous group of supporters. They've gambled a lot on that. They made a big bet and a lot of very smart people in offices looking at their little algorithm tables and whatever and like looking at all the numbers and dotting the I's. They have made a massive gamble on their future. Here's the thing though, they have underestimated the backlash. They have underestimated it because they've done this. They have underestimated it. I'll tell you why, because they're sitting in their condos or in their yachts or wherever, sitting back going, this will get bumpy, but they have no idea how bumpy it's going to get for the people that are public facing. They have no idea how bumpy it's going to get for managers, for players on social media who are going to face that. Now, a lot of people have said, the Super League's inevitable. I'm not so sure, actually.
No, I'm not so sure. Can I just jump in with the thing here, like I said on the thread? Yeah. Whether it happens or not is irrelevant, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's the fact that the conditions have been cultivated for 12 of Europe's biggest clubs.
Yes.
Not the biggest, all 12, but 12 of Europe's biggest clubs to essentially mount a coup on European football.
Exactly.
And I choose those words very, very carefully, and I mean them 100%.
You're right, that's what it is. That's
and
what it
like,
is.
In what fucking world is that okay?
And it needs to be treated as a coup. And this is the thing, I'm sorry, I want to jump in there again. This has to be treated as a coup. There's going to be a lot of people looking at, people are going to be assessing this, this and that. Look, if a bank is robbed in the night, you don't sit there debating the merits of the robbery and whether the merit... No, it's a robbery. A bank was robbed in the night.
And you don't debate the ethics of the bank.
You don't debate... Exactly. The bank was robbed in the night. You don't... the bank had it coming. No, a bank was robbed in the night. And no, this bank was a unique bank because it was full of the dreams of millions of football fans. Mm-hmm. the dreams, the enjoyment, the escapism, that's what was stolen in the night, not the money. What was stolen was the dreams and the aspirations. You don't, oh, well, actually, yeah, we stole your dreams. We've got better dreams for you. No, I liked those ones. Those are the ones I was investing in emotionally. Those are the dreams I had. And you know what's disgusting about this? And I'll say this, like, this was a chaotic Premier League, right? It's been chaotic. And it might have a predictable winner. But here's the thing. Along the way, we've seen, despite these terrible conditions, or maybe because of them, but we've seen clubs play some of the best football I've seen in a while under terrible conditions. Mm-hmm. We've seen Leeds, we've seen Aston Villa, we've seen Leicester play astonishing football. And you're going to cut those people out at a time when those clubs are running themselves beautifully. Those clubs have all had different forms of challenges. They responded really well. At a time when those clubs are emerging, you're going to say, no, we're going to cut them out of the picture. Because you know what's happening? They see them advancing. They're coming up the lawn and they're like, no, let's cut them out. And this is the thing, whatever people say about this conversation, I want people to remember how this felt, because the numbing effect, it's very easy over time to become numb to this. Nothing is inevitable about this. And I want everyone to realize that at some level, even if it's individual, I think dissent, resistance, protest, whatever form that, it matters at this point.
I think if you want to hear a glimpse into the psychology of those at who are behind this, I think is in this Dan Rowan thread. So Dan covers football for the BBC. I'm going to read his entire thread. He said he's told by well-placed sources, Manchester United and Real Madrid are the ringleaders. Three US-owned Premier League clubs really mean this. They're really sold on the NFL model of closed league with star clubs, players driving value. Others see it as a leverage over UEFA. Unhappy with the new Champions League format means money is shared among more clubs. Big clubs from struggling leagues, Spain and Italy, agitating because their domination has produced boring football outcomes. All clubs are hurting due to COVID. There was a thing actually saying that they've lost, I think it was Swiss Ramble posted a really good thread about the losses of clubs. Going back to Dan's thread, they said they want control of the competition structure and of revenue distributions. According to source, here is the thing. Some of those involved in the Super League call traditional supporters of clubs legacy fans, while they are focused instead on fans of the future who want superstar names. Super League insists modelling shows solidarity payments will be boosted by €10 million over 23 seasons. Super League clubs insist they negotiated in good faith with UEFA over new Champions League, but really dislike the new 36-team format, which they feel is quantity over quality. That's a line.
In good faith with Agnelli left in the middle of it.
But this is the thing.
It's no good faith at all.
The quantity over quality thing is kind of going into what I was saying before. So if they genuinely wanted quality over quantity, I mean, they don't. That's the thing. They really don't. I mean, like, we've said this a million times, and I've expressed my personal opinion on how I would like to see changes in European club competition look, or like how I'd want to see them look. I would massively prefer the champions of all the leagues going into the Champions League each season.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not going to happen, but I think that, for example, if you restricted or reduced the amount of clubs that could go into Europe each season, or the variation in each competition each season, you kind of reduce the boredom that leads to stuff like this, you know? So for example, if it was okay for Barcelona to not finish in the Champions League one season, or it was okay for Manchester United not to finish in the Champions League one season, or it was okay for Juve to miss out one season, like, they create conditions of genuine, like, competition again.
Right.
And basically, you know, for example, and the removal of, like, if you finish third in your group, you then parachute into another competition. No, fuck off. Like, fuck
you
off.
You degrade that competition.
Like, this is the thing. Have you ever seen a system that has been more designed by, like, middle-aged white dudes to so consistently reward failure?
How many of them have been in a room with a match-paying fan home and away for the last 20 years? How many of those people have actually been in a room with any of those people? Really, like, for any significant period of time? Like, a lot of people pushing these numbers.
I think the timing of the announcement.
Yep.
I think
that was revealing in itself. Yeah. That was extremely revealing.
They've done it without fans because they know that they won't face any backlash at games immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
If you can go over a year into a pandemic and this is your way to fix it,
yeah,
to pull yourself away from
the game that made you.
Exactly. Let me read you something, right? So Agnelli came out and said, you know, the 12 founding clubs, fucking founding members, like, there's some republic. Yeah, right. It's fucking bullshit. Like,
it's disgusting. It's disgusting. Yeah, yeah.
They said they've got 99 European titles.
And who do they win those off?
I went through and I've listed them. Real Madrid, 15. Barcelona, 12. Liverpool, 9. Milan, 9. Juventus, 6. Inter, 6. Manchester United, 5. Chelsea, 5. Atleti, 4. No European Cups. Spurs, 3. No European Cups. Arsenal, 2. No European Cups. Manchester City have won one European trophy and they've never won a European Cup. That total's 74. So the other 25 are made up of Inter Totos and Super Cups.
Yeah, right.
So they've even fluffed the numbers on that.
Of course they have.
I am an Arsenal fan. You're a Manchester United fan.
But what does that mean at this point? Not being funny, but if this happens, this sounds dramatic, but I was thinking about this last night. I was like, what does that even mean at this point? Like, if they do this, it's disgusting. And I say that, like, you know, here's the thing, right, Ryan, like, if that club operates, thinks it can operate independently, and it doesn't know who gives a damn who my allegiances are, but I'll just end up liking football, I think. I can't root for a club that does that. I don't think I can. I mean, you know, we're all human, we have our attachments, but here's the thing, Ryan, like, I don't know where my allegiances will be, and not that anyone really cares apart from me. Here's the thing though, right? This is from my own personal perspective. There were things that happened in the church that made people break with the church and made them stop filling up the pews and made them stop rooting for it. And people drifted away and they found solace in other things, other spirituality, became atheists because the church basically became objectionable to them. And what this is a moment of the church becoming objectionable to a lot of people. And that's intangible. A lot of people still fill the pews and do whatever, but some will drift away. And I'm not sure at this point if that will include me or other people, if I'll just end up, you know, because I'll always cover football in some form. I'll always cover this, you know, it's my job, right? At the same time, in terms of an allegiance, you know, I'm a Manchester United fan. What does that mean? Like, what you're following, the Glazer thing, you know, the ownership by the Glazers and loading debt onto the club. It's the thing I wrote about, you know, I wrote about it several times and then like you stop writing about it to an extent because at a certain point it's a broken record, right? Debt basically undermining your institution. But fundamentally it's like, well, what am I supporting? What am I rooting for here? Faith in an organization is deep and love for an organization is deep, but these things are not unconditional. Mm-hmm. Love for an abusive institution is not unconditional. Shouldn't be. And if these institutions are going to stop loving football back, which they clearly do, there'll be ramifications. And here's the thing as well. Let me say specifically, these clubs should be ashamed of themselves, particularly those clubs. There are some clubs on that list, and I won't name them because everyone knows who they are. They have held themselves out as being more than this, better than this, community-based, really caring. And they may as well have set fire to the season tickets of some of these supporters because that's what's going to be happening. We don't know the numbers. There will be season tickets holders who will quietly drift away as a result of this. They won't make a big show of it, but it's broken so many hearts today. And the worst thing is, even if this doesn't go ahead, the point you made about, there's a point I want to add to yours. You said, even if this doesn't go ahead, the conditions have been created for the coup. Here's the other thing. Even if this doesn't go ahead, we will never escape the fact that those 12 clubs put themselves out there, whether this happens or not. Those 12 clubs have said permanently, mm-hmm. We don't really care about you. We don't care about who turns up on match day.
Yep.
And that is in that, that's true for Manchester United, for Manchester City, for Liverpool, for Arsenal, for Spurs, you know, for these clubs that say we're bigger and better than that. You're not actually, and you never will be. That is heartbreaking, actually.
It really is. It really is. I want to read something that Melissa Reddy wrote. Just caught this tweet right now. She said, obviously, senior football correspondent at The Independent, extremely well-sourced. Yeah. Melissa says, players were not consulted and aren't keen. Opinions of the managers that will now be in the spotlight and feel questions about the Super League were not taken into consideration. Club staff don't like it. The overwhelming majority of fans don't want this. It's on the owners. And this is the thing. It's on the owners. This is 100%. This is 100% an executive level decision amongst 12 football clubs.
Yeah.
You've got a number of people who are involved with football clubs who have never had an actual emotional bond with it. They've only ever had a business or capital based relationship with the football club.
Yeah.
And they are prepared to blow the whole thing up. The whole model that created the clubs that they have kind of like skateboarded into. Yeah. Like for example, Kroenke, prime example. I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm going to focus on Arsenal because I feel like I can talk about my club and not get, you know, I don't want fans of other football clubs to think like I'm targeting theirs. Kroenke could sell his relationship with Arsenal tomorrow the people who could sell their entire connection for an actual financial value are making the decisions for billions of people who can't.
Exactly.
And the sheer arrogance of the people who are involved in making these decisions, this is the more criminal thing about it. And this is why we said at the top of it, whether it goes ahead or whether it doesn't, is kind of irrelevant. It's the fact that they have felt brazen enough to go and make this call.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what this is about.
Arsenal Football Club, they do not have more of a right to go into a European Super League than any other club in the pyramid. They just don't. They just don't, Musa. And none of these football clubs, no matter how successful they are, none of these clubs have a right to break away. They just don't.
Disgusting.
They
it's just disgusting. Don't. Yeah, they need to know that. They don't.
And this is why I flippantly said in the thread, I was just like, there's part of me that just hopes UEFA just says, fuck all of this. Let's make three competitions, straight knockout, and see how you like it then.
Yeah.
Breakaway. I know a load of people are saying, well, let him go. There's part of me that's kind of like, well, yeah, let them go.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. They've been the, you know what? Let them bin them off and let them play in their weird little gated community / hypermarket. Let them go and like play in a little like gated community. Let them do it, you know. And actually, because there's so many clubs across Europe, I think poor money, strengthen the clubs that didn't break away. Strengthen them, right, at the grassroots. Strengthen their youth systems and really like tell the local stories. And build that, because you know what? This isn't just about football, Ryan. We're in a pandemic right now. We've got something else coming along in a few years, which many of us know about, which is basically like, we're going to have a load of migration due to sea level rises, right? We're going to have a lot of really bad... No, I'm sorry to get into this. This is really important.
I was just reacting to something else that I've just seen.
Because I feel like, you know, I feel like football as a tool for community cohesion is so, not of a tool, but like as a means, is so important, right? It's been so important in this pandemic. On and off the field, you know, people viewing games together on Zoom, people like, you know, watch, you know, basing their evenings around a game. Like this is really, the pandemic has emphasized the importance of football as something bigger than just a spectacle, something brings people together, right? We're going to need it even more in the years to come. And if these people are going to, whatever they are, these skeletons, these corporate skeletons at this point are going to break away, then just let them do it. And you know what? Here's the thing as well, like, this may have unintended consequences for those 12 clubs.
Well, they've just, one of their managers has just been sacked. Jose Mourinho has just been fired by Spurs.
What?
Musa, it's not even midday on a Monday.
What? Okay. Wow.
We can't even deal with this right now.
I mean, wait, no. We're going to do it very quickly, because we're not going to do a full podcast on this, but you know, can I just say this as well? We said this about Jose Mourinho and that documentary, All or Nothing. We talked about it and I was like, oh, I've been a bit harsh. And I thought, oh no, but it's actually, no, we weren't. We were right. We were bang on about that. I'm sorry. I don't like to like say we're right about this or that because, you know, football's a catfish. We get a lot of things wrong, but I never liked the energy of that relationship. I never liked the energy of that. And here's the thing, Ryan, it's not just about what you win or trophies, it's the process. It's how you treat people along the way. Mm-hmm. And that was basically throwing a relationship with one of the greatest coaches Premier League has seen in the modern era, Pochettino, in terms of the ideas that he brought. Because as we see from Bielsa's career, being a great manager isn't just about trophies, it's about what you bring to a league, right? Pochettino was treated in such a disgraceful way towards the end. And Mourinho was the shiny new toy. And now he has seen what happens, Mourinho himself, with shiny new toys. And Levy has done it again. I mean, we've seen what? Like two... Have you ever seen a coup and an execution in the same 24 hours?
Dude, I know I said embrace the chaos, but honestly, fuck. Chill.
This is... I need 4 Twitter accounts. Do you know what? This is wild. This is one of those days when actually the actual action is hotter than the takes. I feel like my hottest take would be cold compared with what's actually happening in football at the moment.
Have we rambled too much about the Super League?
No, we haven't. We can't. It's not possible. It's one of the few times I don't think it's possible to say too much. We can leave it there because we're going to return to it. But I think it's really important to have come on this podcast and just voice our discontent at this point. I think it's you have to put a marker down.
Yeah, I want to wrap with on the Super League stuff by saying that I don't think this is the end of it. I don't think this is how it's going to be. That's my gut feeling. If it is how it's going to be, then this is... I don't think it's hard. I think it's difficult to overstate how seismic this is.
Yeah.
This is probably the most seismic day in the history of the sport, actually.
Yeah.
Decisions regarding the world's biggest sport being made by a handful of extremely wealthy individuals.
To be honest, it's all terrible. And maybe we should say that certain clubs aren't. It's all equally terrible. At the same time, I'm particularly disappointed. I didn't expect more of certain clubs, but I'm particularly disappointed in a couple of clubs on that list. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm particularly disappointed in a couple of clubs on that list because I'm like, you should have been better than that.
The other thing I want to say is that I feel huge, huge sympathy for any football fan, for anyone who is a fan of any of these clubs today.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah,
I think that one thing I do want to say is that, yet again, fans of all of these football clubs have done the work and have put forward views that should be the views of those running their fucking football clubs. Every single supporters group has come out, or supporters trust has come out with basically the same statement, whether they're Spurs fans, or whether they're Manchester United fans, whether they're any fans like that. I really applaud the work of those supporters trusts and supporters groups, because they are basically firefighting right now.
Yeah.
Speaking as a fan of one of these clubs who has put this forward, I know that this has nothing to do with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang or Mikel Arteta. This has nothing to do with 99.9% of the people who are employed at the football club. However, I am deeply, deeply ashamed at the club that I support and have supported likewise all my life. People who run the game are hugely unaware of what makes the game. Put it this way, I've never seen any announcement in football met with the pushback, with the universal pushback that this has.
Yeah, never seen it.
And when things unite pretty much every single football fan on the internet.
Yeah, we know it's funny about this as well, because there are going to be the ones I feel particularly for are the managers, because they're the bridge between the boardroom and the rest of the world, like the players and everything. And those managers will now be, I mean, imagine those conversations with the board.
Mm.
Imagine the year that certain managers have had, like the traumatic year on a personal level that some of those managers have had, both the tragedies, the traumas we know about and the ones that we don't. And he dropped this on them, having to manage, like Zinedine Zidane had 12 fit players to play Getafe, two of whom were on the bench, 12 match fit players, right? And I'm not, you know, in the middle of all of this, you're then making them your spokespeople for a project a lot of them may not even support.
Yep.
I mean, it's wild. It's wild.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right, man. Jose Mourinho has, let's see, have we got a statement yet?
Let's see, I'm looking. I think it's still breaking.
Ryan Mason and Chris Powell in temporary charge at Tottenham, and they will appoint a new manager. Do we save this for a
emergency podcast?
A bonus or what? What do we do, Musa? I don't know. No one at the ring is awake yet. So what do we do? This kind of feels like, like mum and dad have left us at home. And we're like,
Do you know what I feel like? No, I feel worse. I mean, I was recently watching The Cloverfield Paradox. I'm going to spoil it for you, sadly. who hasn't watched it already.
You sat through that?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. I turned it off after like 15 minutes.
So here's the thing. You know, I feel like the Cloverfield paradox where they escape being sucked into the vortex of space-time only to get safely back to Earth, and then they land back on Earth in the space probe only to get basically confronted by a monster as big as a cloud. And I feel like that. I feel like we came to end this podcast having safely navigated the horror of the European Super League as a concept. And the Mourinho sacking appears like a monster out of the cloud. That's how I feel. It's just, I can't process it. Because, look, people are pretty clear on my view of the Mourinho appointment and the concerns I had about it. The concerns I had about what I saw in the All or Nothing documentary, squad chemistry, issues like that. And it felt like people thought I was maybe being harsh and my assessment I thought was quite measured. But I look at this and just go, have I ever seen a more predictable mess?
Yeah, I mean, we said when he was announced, I think that this was kind of like a bit of an arrogance hire by Levy. I think he always wanted Spurs to be a club that could attract the likes of Jose Mourinho.
Yeah,
or I think he always wanted Jose Mourinho as manager. But when they met, the trajectories were at very different points and going in very different directions. And didn't we do a what if about Mourinho going to Newcastle?
Yeah, we did.
I think it's going to happen.
Terrifying.
Can you imagine if Mourinho ends up at Newcastle?
Well, you have imagined it and it was terrifying. I'm actually getting scared of what if scenarios.
I don't like this, man. Like, I posted that thing a few weeks ago about liking Gladbach playing in black shorts, and then
you've incepted it.
And then they posted that, you know, the future with the black shorts. They tweeted it and I'm just like, what's, I don't like this. I don't like this power.
Are you incepting things?
I think this power, Moose. It's like, you know, I was watching The Dark Knight again the other night, just for...
It's a quantum podcast. We're incepting people. You're channeling vast swathes of energy, of cosmic energy that you cannot control. I feel like this feels like a cosmic energy moment.
Oh, God. I'm exhausted. It's before midday on a Monday and I'm exhausted.
I'm stressed out. Yeah.
I vote for getting out of here.
I agree. Can we get out of here? Gonna run to the front door of my flat and find they've walled it up. I'm stuck in here. It's like, you're living in a Super League now. You can't get out.
I just want my vaccine so I can escape all of this. Please. I'm, do you know what? Fuck football. I'm going to Andy Dufresne it. I'm gone.
See, I'm terrified. I'm only half joking. I'm terrified that we'll get to the edges of like the city limits and there'll be nothing there. Just antimatter. We've been swallowed up.
Giant wire fence that just says Super League controlled zone.
You are now in the Super League, exactly.
And if you step into it, it's just all of a sudden like, it's like when you, you know, go trespassing on government property.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like they've quietly privatized like the neighborhood in our absence. Oh, sorry, Moose, that's €5 to walk there. What? Yeah, yeah, sorry, it's the Super League thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe we can do a little bit of the Jose stuff on Wrighty's house. We'll see.
I think you'll have to, yeah.
I have no idea what's going on, everyone. I'm really, really sorry. I hope that, I mean, a lot of people tweeted at us about today's Stadio episode when the Super League stuff was being announced. So I hope that we, I don't know.
Can I say this, Ryan? These are exceptional circumstances. I would advise hydration the next 24 hours. I really would.
Do you know what? I'm not even going to bleep that out.
Yeah, I really would advise it. It's the only thing I can control at this moment.
I'm going straight for the whiskey.
You know, mind my own business. Take my vitamins and mind my own business.
I mean, a lot of what we said about the Super League was obviously kind of coming from quite an emotional place. So definitely we've missed some details or we've missed some points of view that we probably would have made. We'll cover it again. We'll do a follow-up because obviously it's a hugely, rapidly developing story. Yeah, we just tried to be as honest as we possibly could about our feelings about it. And not everyone will agree with us, but I think just to sum up very, very quickly on that, just to clarify in case anyone is in any doubt, UEFA aren't the good guys here. We're not saying that they are. There aren't many good guys involved in this scenario. Shouts to Ravi Palmer, who just tweeted us saying the world hasn't been the same since you guys released the Chaotic 11.
Oh no.
And to be honest, we've still got to do our follow-up on that as well, which we haven't forgotten about, by the way. We're just waiting for a gap in the schedule to do it. And at the moment, it looks like we're never going to get one, but we will do it. For now, should we just bounce? Because
yeah, let's do it. Let's bounce. Get out of here if we can.
Wild.
While we still can. Yeah.
We hope everyone's staying safe and well and try and get off the internet for a bit if you can.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do some laundry.
Yeah.
Back to basics.
Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer. Don't forget to check the Stadio outros on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out this episode with the distributors, Never Never. Any other admin we need to shout out? I can't think anymore. I have no idea what's going on.
I would just recommend that could we turn football off and turn it back on again?
Can we restore it to factory settings? Can we just leave it off?
Can we restore it to factory settings?
Yeah. Can we leave it off, please? Yeah. Stay strong, everyone.
I'm gonna do some laundry. Stay strong. I'm gonna do some laundry and get some pizza, and that's that on that.
All right, man. Okay. I'll probably speak to you in a bit.
Yeah, see ya.
Take care, everyone. Wow. We'll be back in a few days.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.